There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Well, we have things that I can do. We have very strong emergency powers under the Stafford Act. And I have it memorized practically as to the powers in that act. And if I need to do something, I'll do it. I have the right to do a lot of things that people don't even know about.
Are you going to do that today?
Well, something? I don't want to say that. But, you know, at some point, it may be some of the more minor things at this point.
All right. So a possibility, President Trump may sign a emergency declaration today. We'll watch that. And moving on with this edition of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Glad to have you all along on this Thursday. Lots to talk about on today's show. We're going to get into it. I do want to roll out a couple things here. Programming notes when it comes to cancellations and our programming. Got a note here from Brad Law at the Auburn Sports Network. Southeastern Conference has released the following statement, which has direct impact on our operations and schedule for at least 2 weeks. The remainder of the SEC men's basketball tournament that y'all have been hearing would start hearing tomorrow night at 6 here. You're not going to, because it says, quote here from the SEC men's basketball tournament, they have canceled this. So we understand this decision will be disappointing to our student athletes and coaches who have been preparing all season to compete in this event, as well as the viewers at home, said SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. Also from the SEC office, based on the latest developments and continued spread of the coronavirus, COVID-19, Southeastern Conference announced today the suspension of regular season competition for teams in all sports on SEC campuses, as well as SEC championship events. Of course, we're talking about this morning. What does that mean for March Madness? I think we're looking at the fact that March Madness will be a no-go. All right, so what we set that up there, and we'll talk about the cancellations as we go throughout the next couple of hours of live local talk. Cancellations that are here locally and regionally, these will probably keep coming in. And a reminder, too, you can always hit us up on the text line at 343-0106, 343-0106. If you've got something that you know, you got a business or an event or something that is canceled, we can pass that information along right here on this show and 40 plus hours a week of live local programming that we do. All right, so I look up here as I get set up on Midday Mobile, and I see Dr. Randy Murphy with the Mobile County Health Department joining us in the studio. And I know you've been asked, I don't know, probably 10 to 20,000 questions about coronavirus or COVID-19. Let's get ready to double that. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
And talk about your background, too, before we even get started. You've got quite a background in service to our country in a national sense doing this, and we're lucky to have you here in Mobile, so talk about that.
That's right. I'm an epidemiologist, which means I'm...
What y'all do, epidemiologist?
disease detective is what most people think of it. Yeah, investigate outbreaks of disease or illness or injury. I spent 20 years at the Centers for Disease Control. During that time, I was active duty in the U.S. Public Health Service, retired as a captain, and I'm very happy about that. So that was about a year and a half ago. I moved to this area down to Mobile to be closer to family. I actually grew up here, graduated high school in George County, Mississippi, just across the line.
Yeah.
So when I came, this opportunity that I have now at the Mobile County Health Department opened up, as the Director of Disease Surveillance and Environmental Services, and I'm just really thrilled to be with the agency and to bring the skill and experience that I have in outbreak investigation and responding to outbreaks of disease and epidemics and pandemics of disease to help Mobile County Health Department and our community prepare.
Well, we're lucky to have you here and very thankful to have you on board on the show here to talk more about it. First of all, you just said epidemics and pandemics. I have a whole sheet of questions here, but I'll jump down for the epidemic versus pandemic in definition. Educate us.
So it starts really with outbreak. So okay. That's sort of just a local thing, something that you might see in a town or a city or a county. When it gets more widespread, then we talk about an epidemic. It's across the country or maybe one or two or three countries. But when you start seeing the same disease causing outbreaks on all the continents and in all the countries, that's when it goes to a pandemic.
Okay.
And it really takes something that, you know, is spread easily person to person through global travel to create that pandemic situation that we are now in, having WHO just declared that yesterday.
You know, imagine in times past with the slowness of travel or whatever, if we go back, well, you and I get in the time machine, we'll go back. Certain diseases, you could have an outbreak, you could have saturation in a country or a region that might not become pandemic because people didn't get to places as quickly.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we have seen other outbreaks, the Ebola outbreak in Africa, some other respiratory outbreaks have occurred. We see polio outbreaks, not polio outbreaks, but we see cases of those things happening, and we can contain it, right?
Right.
We can contain it in a local geography and try to keep it from spreading by implementing some containment measures, that sort of thing. But when you have something that is transmitted so easily person to person, and then we've got plane travel and airplane travel and boat travel and all that, it gets around pretty easily. The last pandemic that I remember was in 2009. We had the H1N1 influenza pandemic. And that also, of course, you know, was a respiratory virus. So those tend to be the ones that are at greatest threat for causing a pandemic.
Okay, so you have that, and you're talking about respiratory, because I'm jumping around in my questions, but I'll go to that one. No, I'll go to that one first here, because that's a question. You see, somebody's left some hand sanitizer here, you know, in the studio. There you go. Have at it. This is a commodity, more expensive than the finest wines right now. We've got it in here. People washing their hands. I've been saying for a couple weeks of this, listen, the silver lining to this is if more people wash their hands and use hand sanitizer, that's good. But then I read up, you talk about respiratory.
Mm-hmm.
So is this an airborne virus? Is this transferred? I mean, are we not saying it's not good to wash our hands, but are we fooling ourselves that washing hands and keeping our hands away from our face is going to protect us?
No, that's exactly what we need to be doing. So this coronavirus is not airborne. It's spread on respiratory droplets. And respiratory droplets, when you cough or you sneeze, they go into the air immediately, but they're too heavy to linger there for very long. So, like, you and I are sitting, 5-6 feet apart?
That's right.
So if I were to cough or sneeze right now, you would be protected just by that distance.
Unless you're really big cougher, yes.
but my respiratory droplets might drop on this desk or on the microphone, and it could live there on those surfaces for some time, and different viruses can live there for different periods of time. That's why we have other recommendations, so disinfecting surfaces frequently, and then also not touching your face with your hands. So, you know,
now, of course, when you say that, you know, that everybody wants to scratch their nose.
Yeah, exactly. So if you do touch a surface that has the virus on it that is still alive, you just don't want to, like, scratch your nose or, you know, rub your eye or, you know.
But so what is, I mean, I know that there'll be case specific and all that, but in general, the longevity of that virus on an inanimate surface is
a couple of days maybe.
Really?
I think, you know, in a laboratory setting under perfect conditions of temperature and humidity and light, you could probably stretch it out. Even I've seen some things in the news that are just hard to believe, but we do know that viruses can live on surfaces for a few hours to maybe even as long as 24 to 36, 48 hours.
So outside of a host.
Yeah, and it just depends, like I said, on the light. You know, it's really sensitive to UV light, so outside outside. It wouldn't last as long on surfaces, maybe.
Interesting. So UV does damage it. So inside, it has a better longevity on an inanimate surface than it might right outside in the sunshine.
It probably will. I don't know the data behind that. But again, you just want to, you know, make sure you disinfect surfaces. Also outside, you've got a lot of space out there, so mm-hmm. you don't have the
concentration,
right,
of people
exactly.
touching things. But I want people to, we'll go back and say this again, not airborne, but
respiratory,
can be transferred by droplets that come out sneezing or coughing.
Right, that's right.
Okay, so it come through the air, but it's not like it's floating around.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's not floating around. There are some viruses that do that, like the virus that causes measles. But these viruses, coronavirus, influenza, those sorts of things, they are transmitted through respiratory droplets.
Okay. You've talked about coronavirus. First of all, let's go back to square one. What are the coronaviruses?
Yeah, so it's a class of viruses that have been around really for a long time.
Okay.
They're named coronavirus. It comes from the word crown. They have this surface structure that looks like they have these little crown spikes on them if you looked at it under an electron microscope. In the 60s, we began to see coronaviruses circulate among humans and causing common colds. So, you know, for the past 50, 60 years, there have been coronaviruses around causing flu-like symptoms or common colds during, you know, seasonal flu times, October to March. But we've had three novel coronaviruses, so they're related to these that we've had around for a while, but they're different enough that their patterns are different, their illnesses are somewhat different, the reservoirs are different. So we had MERS, Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, we had SARS, Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome, and now we have this new one called SARS-CoV-2, and that's the virus that causes COVID-19.
Okay, so that makes a little more sense to me because, you know, you talk about MERS and SARS, and then this one's called coronavirus.
Yeah,
so
the naming convention changed a little bit, but the international classification for the virus itself is SARS-CoV-2.
Okay.
And the disease that is caused by that virus is called COVID-19.
19 referencing what?
2019.
Year of detection.
When it was first detected.
All right. We're coming right back. I have a lot more questions. I know folks on the text line do as well at 343-0106, 343-0106. Dr. Mindy Murphy with the Mobile County Health Department, our guest right here on Midday Mobile. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. And a lot to do in this hour, a lot of questions to ask, and we are very lucky to have somebody with a lifetime of experience on this at a national level with us right here in Mobile County. Dr. Randy Murphy with the Mobile County Health Department spent time at Centers for Disease Control, decades at Centers
That's
for
right.
Disease Control. And you probably said, well, you know, I'm going to come back here to the Gulf Coast, come back home, take it easy.
Yeah, I retired from active duty to come here and kind of live out my last decade or so of employment. So little did I know I was going to land on top of a coronavirus outbreak.
But this is happening now. I look at, I think, what the latest statistic was, like 1,300 cases in the United States.
Right.
You know, I'm seeing this, of course, doing this for a living. We talk about it a bunch, and people have concerns and calls. I was at a big box store in between my two shows today, and there was somebody in there with a mask on. And I heard people lamenting the lack of hand sanitizer on the aisles. That just happened. I was in there for about 14 minutes, and I heard that.
Yeah, we've been hearing reports of that from all over town. You know, it's interesting because I think we keep trying to remind people that for, you know, 80-90% of the people who get infected with this new coronavirus, they're going to have a very mild illness.
Okay.
It's only the, you know, older population, 65 and older, or people who have underlying medical conditions that make them a little bit more medically fragile, that are going to have severe complications and then potentially die. Very serious illness, but for the majority of us, it would just be a mild illness, just like a common cold or maybe a, you know, a feel like allergy season or something like that. But it's because it's new and unknown, everyone is just, you know, really concerned and a little bit, you know, wary of what's going on. And people that call me and are really, really concerned about it and want to know what to do, I say, did you get a flu shot this year? And yeah, most of them say, no, I don't need a flu shot. Like, we have a vaccine for flu.
Right.
And, you know, so just trying to sort of right-size the reaction is the reason why we're out talking to people and answering lots of questions and trying just to give them information that they need to make good decisions.
Yeah, help me balance that, because that's something we've been talking about on the air. I said, you know, running like you're running from, you know, Godzilla in one of those old movies is silly, and saying, well, there's nothing, this is made up, is silly. So there's some point in between to be here, right?
I mean, yeah, there really is. And we can all do our part to protect ourselves, our families, our communities. And it's right now, because there are no, you know, therapeutics or medicines. I mean, the best thing that we can do is just, you know, practice good hand hygiene, wash our hands, stay at home if you're sick, you know, don't put your hands in your eyes, nose, or mouth. Just those very basic practices that we try to remind people of, you know, every year at flu season, that will protect you from lots of germs in your environment. But I think it's a little nerve-wracking, because folks, they want to be able to do something. They want to know what to do. Should I travel? Should I not travel? Should I stock up on toilet paper? Should I not?
Yeah.
So
I don't understand the toilet paper thing.
I don't either.
So I don't understand that part. But the travel thing, we've had, I mean, I started off the show with the cancellation of the SEC basketball tournament, and then what it means for March Madness going forward. We have festivals around here being canceled already nationally. You have, you know, if you look at New Orleans canceled their St. Patrick's Day parade. You have, so people are taking these precautions, but is that, and I guess the part of it, is it the danger of the spread, or is it the reaction once the virus gets to somebody? Are we trying to, you know?
There are two things that we, two sort of stages of the response. One is containment. So when it first gets on our soil, we try to contain it where it lands. Try not to let it spread to other states or
other. Is that what they're doing in New Rochelle up in New York? They have that.
Right. So that's what they tried to have been working on really hard in Seattle and along California, and it's going to start happening in lots of places. So we try to containment, and we have containment measures for helping with that. Once it gets to where it's spreading in the community and we know we can no longer contain it, then we start implementing these mitigation activities, which means we reduce the opportunity for the virus to spread in large groups of people, right? So that mitigation means, you know, canceling things where you're going to have a lot of people indoors for a prolonged period of time. That can include, you know, indoor sporting events. It can include, you know, potentially, you know, schools, businesses, those sorts of things. And then there are other mitigation measures that, like, for example, a healthcare system may determine to make one location where all of the people who have fever and cough go, and everyone else goes to the other clinics, right? So you try to limit.
Keep it in one place.
Yeah, you try to limit where the folks who may have respiratory disease are out and about in the community, allowing the folks who are seeking health care for other reasons to go where there's less circulation of the virus. So there are lots of different things. And there are, we've been planning for this, you know, for a long time.
Yes.
Public health has been planning for a pandemic. We thought it was going to be influenza, but it's coronavirus. So, but we've been planning for a long time. And so we just pull out those documents, you know, dust them off, modify them slightly for this virus, and then just, you know, follow the plans that we have made for some time. Right now in Mobile and in Alabama, we're still in monitoring surveillance mode because we don't have any cases yet, or none detected yet. And so
That's a question. None detected,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Do you want to jump there?
Yeah. Well, I just we can jump back, but for a second there,
okay.
I mean, the idea, would it, scientifically based, just a law of averages, is there probably a chance we have a case in the state? There's one in Mississippi now. There's some in Georgia,
yes,
Florida.
It's very likely that we have undetected coronavirus infections in Alabama. I mean, there are only 5 states in the U.S. right now that do not have a diagnosed case, and Alabama's one of them. All of our neighboring states have, you know, positive infect, you know, have detected infections in their residents. We don't know a lot about those people, where they traveled, who they were around, that sort of thing. But, you know, because testing was somewhat limited in the beginning, and is still somewhat limited, we've really only been tested, we've only been testing the ones at greatest risk or the ones that are the sickest.
Mm-hmm.
So that means we're going to detect it in those that have the highest chance of being positive.
Right. But
by
because
doing
you're triaging
things.
This yeah, and how you use the...
we're really prioritizing that community. So when we start testing more people and when testing becomes available to people who aren't, you know, as ill, mm-hmm. We will start seeing, you know, milder infections potentially, that sort of thing.
Now, you know, I look at the, what, over $8 million coming to Alabama to aid in this, although Mobile County Health Department is a separate entity from Alabama Department of Public Health, right? So do you all get the same money? How does that work?
Yeah, you're right. We're somewhat separate, but we abide, you know, we follow the guidance from the Alabama Department of Public Health, and the guidance that they're setting forth for coronavirus, we are, you know, in close alignment with. With regard to the funding, there are lots and lots and lots of federal funding that come, opportunities that come to the state health department that they pass to Mobile,
okay.
So that we can carry out those duties in Mobile County the way they're being done around the rest of the state.
Okay, so you'll be in more the test kit. And my gosh, we have a minute here for the news break, so I don't want to set something, but I do want to ask you about the test kits, because I talked to Pastor Chris Bell when he was, had him on the show when he was in Palestine. And
okay,
he was
that's
one of the
right.
And they had, he called in right after he'd gotten swabbed. He talked about the long swab and said, man, it felt like that swab was the whole way up my nose. But
yeah.
Then he said he had to wait for them to test that
right.
sample. I want to kind of go through that process when we come back and kind
sure.
of how that all works.
Sure, happy
We're
to.
We're continuing the discussion with Dr. Brenty Burfrey of the Mobile County Health Department, talking about coronavirus, COVID-19, and what you need to know right now. Be right back. News is next.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And text line is busy. And thank you as you're texting in different cancellations or questions about that. We're going to assemble all those in one place and keep that in front of everybody, as there's just little bits and pieces coming now to our area. But the big story we started off with, especially for our broadcast tomorrow, no Auburn basketball as the SEC tournament has been canceled. All right, real treat in studio to have Dr. Brenty Burfrey with the Mobile County Health Department in with decades of experience at the Centers for Disease Control and be able to bring that wisdom to us here. I want to kind of get down to the nitty-gritty on this test first, and then I've got some of my, you know, history of this questions I want to ask. But the test process, are we having trouble? You said right now triage those most at risk or those people that have been exposed, probably. How many tests are there, and are we getting more tests?
Yeah, so those are a lot of questions with
yes.
one breath, but I'll try to get around to it.
Okay.
So I think the important thing to remember is that we are gaining capacity and building capacity and testing more and more every day.
Okay.
You know, it was just 1 week ago that the Alabama Department of Public Health State Laboratory, the Bureau of Clinical Labs, just 1 week ago, they were validated to conduct tests themselves.
Wow.
And so we just need to remember that we're, you know, this is a fast-moving outbreak, and we're all just trying to do the best we can to keep up. Having said that, more and more commercial labs are coming on board every day, and so we will see capacity build at the state health department and in these commercial labs as days go by and weeks go by. It will build and build. Today, right now, the Alabama Department of Public Health has to restrict testing to about 5 categories of people, and 3 of those are people who are sick and have been around people who have COVID-19 disease. They've either been diagnosed with it, or people who have traveled in countries where widespread community outbreaks are going on, like China and Italy and parts of Europe, right? So the people that are at highest risk. At the State Health Department, they also are allowing testing for 2 other types: people who are hospitalized and other causes of respiratory disease have been ruled out.
Okay.
And they're just not sure what they have, and maybe they got it someplace domestically. Or people who are sick They're not sure about the exposure, and they're in that highest risk category for severe disease, 65 and older, or have immunocompromising conditions. So that's what the state health department can test today. It likely will change tomorrow or by Monday,
right.
So if you replay this broadcast, you know, just remember, it can change. So the way testing, and that testing is done in Montgomery, I should qualify. It's only done in Montgomery. The swabs and the shipping containers that are necessary for collecting the specimens are generally provided. Either hospitals have them, or the health department will ship them to, you know, pre-place them in hospitals.
Right.
A physician or a nurse would take those specimens, put them in the material, and then ship them to Montgomery. Depending on what time of day it gets there, you might get results the next day. It might be a day or two. And then they would let the providers know what that result was. The important thing is that because people have relatively mild illness, after they're tested, they may be able just to go back home and wait for their test result.
Right.
And that feels a little uncomfortable to some people, but that's the best recommendation we have. If you're sick, but your illness is mild enough to stay at home and stay away from other people where you're not spreading the germs, that's what we want you to do. So you would go home and wait for your test result.
What's the incubation period on this?
So it's 2 to 14 days. So once you're exposed, then if you're infected, we would see symptoms within 2 to 14 days.
Can you be, well, I guess you've already answered that, you could be contagious and not exhibit any of the symptoms?
We don't think so.
Okay.
It's possible that some people with mild symptoms,
they might not even notice they're like
that. Don't even notice it, right. But we don't think you can spread the virus before you're symptomatic with fever or a cough.
Okay, so right now, like you said,
this all changed. That's right.
Yeah.
And the other thing about right now is that if you're tested by the state health department right now, the specimens can really only be pulled from a patient at a hospital setting.
Okay.
And that's putting us in a situation of, we don't want people to rush to the hospital, because you, most of you are not going to meet that those five or six criteria for testing.
Right.
We want you to call us, let us walk this through this with you, and let you know if you would be prioritized for testing. And then if the answer is yes, then we would work with the hospitals to get a controlled entry in for testing.
So don't just go show up and say, I'm here for my coronavirus test.
Please don't. No. Call your provider. They should be able to walk through that triage list with you. And then, you know, we can take it from there. Now, the testing that's done at the commercial laboratories is much more unknown to people like me. I'm with the health department, right?
Right.
Commercial laboratories sometimes have, you know, confidential testing and, you know, keep their stuff private and that sort of thing. They're working really hard, and we know testing is being done in Mobile. I hear every day about another lab that's been accessed for testing for Mobile County residents. And so we then will just know what their test results are if they're positive.
But not for negative.
I mean, we'd like to get every test result, but but they're reported, the positive result is reportable to the state within 4 hours. So we want to know really soon so that we can start implement those containment measures that we talked about.
We talked about the incubation period, but what about the duration? Once somebody starts showing the symptoms, let me put it in language I can. Once you're sick, how long are you sick
for,
doctor?
How long do you stay sick? Yeah. So it depends on your age and your health and your immune system and those sorts of things. Most of us that are young and healthy, you know, we may have a low-grade fever, a cough. It may persist for a couple days. We may be able to clear it if we, you know, hydrate and, you know, take some fever-reducing meds and cough suppressants. We'll maybe feel okay. It doesn't seem to disproportionately affect children. So we're very happy about that, of course.
Absolutely.
Doesn't seem to disproportionately affect pregnant women. That's a really great thing. Young people seem to be able to survive the illness and get through it with a fairly, you know, mild illness. But the folks that are 60, 65 and older, or that have immunocompromising conditions, those are the ones that can progress to severe illness, complications like pneumonia, trouble breathing, that sort of thing. And people who are in those age categories, we're already recommending that they not go on cruise ships, that they reconsider traveling a long distance on airplanes, that they stay close to home. If they can stay close to home, stay out of those congregate settings and really follow those hand washing and social distancing recommendations. You know, it's funny, we tell people, you know, stay at home, don't go to work, and people still go to church. You know,
That's right.
Hug and kiss everybody,
yes,
right?
Yes.
But church is a congregate setting,
yes.
So be careful. We're hearing that, you know, people where those highest risk groups are housed, like nursing home or assisted living or those, you know, dialysis units, those types of agencies are already starting to sort of implement some of those mitigation strategies by limiting visitation, or instead of having everyone come to the dining hall to eat, they're delivering meals, those sorts of things. So there are things that agencies can do now to try to minimize transmission in those congregate settings where those highest risk groups are.
And so we need to think about that too, as maybe you have people in those groups that are quarantined, self-quarantined. If for some reason we're going to, say it's our parents or something, we're going to have interaction with them, we better think about that too, going into that area.
Yeah, that's right. And not only just caring for them, but also supporting them. You know, you may need to run to the grocery store for them or pick up their prescriptions or something
right.
of that nature, you know, take their taxes in
yes.
if they need it. So families do need to plan for those types of things. What if your kid had to stay home from school for, you know, 10 days or 2 weeks?
Right.
Who would care for that child if you still were going to work, couldn't stay at home with it? So those kinds of things are what we really want families to be thinking about right now.
You're talking about the planning, and you talk about the weeks. That leads me to my next question. We think about flu, and we'll say, hey, it's flu season.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it started early this year, it went late this year, but we have a general idea when it hits. Duration on this, any way to is this weeks, is this months? I mean, I'm looking at China, it's been months over there.
Yeah, so I think this first year we're not going to know until we can look back at it. It truly is going to be the year of 2020.
Okay.
2020 vision.
yes
You know, when we started seeing pandemic H1N1 in 2009, it popped up in Mexico around April, May. That's when we first started reacting to it.
Okay.
And we had it through the summer, and then it fell in line with seasonal flu. And a lot of people don't know that we still have H1N1 circulating in during seasonal flu even today.
It's still out there.
It's
showing
still
up.
Out there. And so the first year with coronavirus, it's probably going to misbehave. It's not going to follow the rules or
okay.
what we think are the rules. But we hope that, you know, like SARS, that it will sort of work itself out and then we won't see it again. If it does stay with us, hopefully it will get aligned with seasonal influenza, and it will be just like those other four coronaviruses that we see every year. We still see some MERS in the Middle East every once in a while. That seems to maybe jump from animals to humans, you know, on rare occasion, but continues to happen. But this one, it's just going to take us some time to see. I hope it dies out with seasonal influenza at the end of spring, early summertime, but only time will tell.
You mentioned the animals there, which takes me into one of my series of questions. We talk about swine flu, avian flu. These things have a discussion here for coronavirus. Is it bats? Is it pangolin or whatever? But are these diseases all coming interspecies? I mean, is that where they're coming from some animal and getting into humans? Is that what makes them novel, because it hasn't been in the humans
exactly
before?
Exactly. So these are viruses that have, you know, animal reservoir, non-human animal reservoirs.
Okay.
I think we tend to not think of ourselves as animals.
Right.
And they're the scariest. So when they jump from animals where they probably don't even cause illness.
Because that's just something that's germane to a pangolin or a bat or
exactly.
a pig or something like that.
Exactly. And then, you know, lots of reasons why humans are getting more and more into the space occupied by non-human animals.
Yes.
And then, you know, this potential to jump from animal to humans is really very concerning to scientists, because it does, you know, create disease that we've just never seen before, and we're having to deal with it. What we try to do is learn from, you know, similar species or similar pathways or similar behaviors, biology, and then, you know, use those building blocks and hopefully not start just totally from ground zero, but to really sort of use what we've learned with other species or other similar events to build on it.
It's interesting because we talk about the animals here, the critters we just discussed, and it's not that, you know, if it was primates, people would say, well, okay, there's a similar, but for example, if a dog has parvo, bad for dog, but I'm not getting parvo. It's different enough, right? So, but we're talking about animals here very different, let alone dogs or pigs, bats and pangolins, and there's something there that somehow is translated in a human being that now affects human beings.
Right, right. I know. It's amazing, isn't it, science?
That it jumps, but it jumps, you know, you would think, oh, if it's going to jump, it's going to be something, it'll be primates before anything. But.
Yeah, I don't think that that's necessarily true. I mean, there
it's
are
not. That's what I'm saying. That's what leaves me kind of.
And the other thing I think people don't know is that there are some examples of where human illness has jumped into animals. So, for example, elephants can get tuberculosis disease, and it's thought that humans were the
transmitted to the elephant,
right? That the humans gave it to the elephants. And you know, now we see sometimes something like leprosy, the bacteria that causes leprosy in armadillos, and
yes,
that likely came from humans.
I've always heard that that's, they're the carriers, but it possibly we gave it to them.
Yeah, or bidirectional. So so it happens the other way. It's just that we are more worried about when it happens to the human, you know, the human population.
Absolutely. What about, somebody's asked a question about temperature. You mentioned that earlier. We're talking about outside, inside, and all that. Is it something, because you said, I mean, this is not going to act right in its first year and mm-hmm. do what it wants. Because is there anything to say, hey, it gets over 80 degrees, it gets over 90 degrees, then the virus can't live? Is there any science to that?
No, there are no rules to that. So, you know, this year people said, oh, why did flu start earlier? Is it climate change? Is it we had too much rain? What is it? And I can't say. And the most informed scientists of the world, I think, would be hesitant to sort of make any strong declarations about why that might be. But like you said, we have some general, you know, guidelines that we follow that it's, you know, generally October through April, that sort of thing. And yes, due to not just the weather warming up.
That? But, yeah, so is it,
but people like aren't indoors as much, right? They're outdoors more. Kids are out of school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of those things will contribute to sort of that, you know, that flu season sort of winding down and then ramping back up, you know, in the fall.
So we picture this, we look at it and go, well, it must be the temperature, without looking at the fact that there's certain habits or
exactly.
certain things we're doing those time of years that it's not the temperature, it may be the behavior of the human beings.
Yeah, like in the winter, all of our festivals are indoors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, starting April, well, here, starting March, April,
yes.
May, we have mostly outdoor festivals, you know, where
yes.
you're not going to have the chance of that sort of, you know, close contact, spreading things, you know, you've got the light, you know. So our behaviors change has a lot to do with it.
All right. Before we wrap up, you have a chance here to talk to a lot of folks in Mobile and Baldwin County. You've been doing it, which we appreciate.
Thank you.
What do they, just the quick takeaway, it's individuals, adults, their children, what do they need to do to mitigate any chance of this, or if they do get it, mitigate transferring?
Yeah, so I do think that it's important for everyone not to panic. I mean,
good.
We know that it's going to be here. I mean, it's across the U.S. now, so we are likely to have a case in Alabama and Mobile County in the coming days or weeks. So the important thing is not to panic. But everybody has a part to play in preparing your personal situation, your family situation, your business situation for what you might need to do should you have to stay at home if you are sick. If you are sick and you have a mild illness, stay at home, increase your disinfection. You know, don't be around people, particularly that are highly vulnerable, the elderly and those that are medically fragile. Please practice good hand washing techniques. Cover your cough, fist bump or elbow tap.
Yeah, you and I did wing swing.
Is
when
that
you came
what it's
in.
Called?
Yeah, wings. I learned that the other day. Wing swing.
The wing
that's
swing.
What, that's what
okay.
You and I did.
You
yeah.
should trademark that. I've not heard that before.
Wing swing.
You know, just be smart about, you know, disinfecting your homes. Stay away from people if you're ill. practicing that hand hygiene. If you have questions, call your provider first. Please don't go into provider offices, urgent care, and emergency departments if you have a mild illness, a mild febrile, you know, respiratory illness. Call ahead and let's talk about that, because we don't want to jam up the emergency departments and urgent care and make long waits for people who need to have, you know, a leg fixed or an arm fixed or something right. else.
You want to be able to allocate the resources to the right places.
Right. And it's really hard to try to refrain from buying out the big boxes of masks and hand sanitizer and Clorox.
Yes, doctor, please tell people that, those that would be tempted to do this now, because there's not much left out there.
Try not to hoard, you know, supplies. We're not recommending masks to people who are just out and about the community. We only recommend masks for people who have a fever and are coughing and need to go to the doctor's office.
That's to keep it in.
That's to keep it in.
But would one of these denser masks keep it out? Like, how dense does the mask have to be to protect
you from
the
virus? We just recommend a normal surgical mask. I mean, people want to get the mask with the canisters and all of that, but if you've not been...
What's the size of that virus to get through? It seems like...
That's a really good question. I mean, it's pretty small.
Yeah, you know, if you
microns are
right,
tenths of micrometers.
It seems like it could go right through.
Yeah, but...
Because you're just trying to keep the water droplets out of your nose and mouth, like you told it.
It's a droplet, right? So we're just trying to keep the droplets.
So we're not... It's not that the coronavirus is cruising around, coming in and getting through it.
That's right.
It's to keep sneeze and cough from getting into the saliva or the nasal cavity of somebody else.
Yeah, if you are sick with a fever and a cough, if you're going to go into public, then wearing a mask benefits everyone else.
All right.
Right, to try to protect them.
Well, thank you for being on with us. Thank you for the education on this. I know y'all are very, very busy, but it makes us feel better to have somebody with your qualifications right here at home and
Great.
Advising us on it.
Hope I helped.
You helped a bunch. It's Dr. Brenda Murphy, and she is with the Mobile County Health Department, but decades of service for the Centers for Disease Control. We appreciate her time, and now I'm going to try to get her phone number so I can call her every day and a half with a new question. Watch, this is when folks run out of the studio on me. All right, coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. Also, AL5's Congressman Bo Brooks joins us from Washington coming up a little after 1 o'clock. Y'all stay close.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, real fast here before top of the hour news, and we'll share these pages too. Dr. Murphy just gave me some links here through the Alabama Department of Public Health, their website, and a Centers for Disease Control website. Flowcharts, what to do. These are really helpful here, plus some phone numbers as well. Remember, before you go act, contact your healthcare provider. Contact and find out what you should do before you show up at the, wherever. They're going to direct you to the right place. Just like we were talking about a second ago, make sure you're not getting in the way of those people that need to go to this place or another. And that information available, once again, we'll put it up on the Twitter feed and on Facebook, but you can go to alabamapublichealth.gov and from there also go on to Centers for Disease Control. All right, coming up next hour, we got a note here from Mo Brooks. So AL5's Congressman Mo Brooks, who's been on the show with us quite a few times, he said to me, he said, they got a briefing there in the House of Representatives. So the physician for the House of Representatives gave a briefing to members of the House, and Congressman Brooks had sent me some information on this, but he's going to join us in just a second to talk more about this, what they were told. And it's more of the federal response. We talked to Dr. Murphy about the medical side of it. This is more about a government response, what's going to be done, some of the ideas about where the money's flowing. We talked about that for Alabama. What does that mean for other states? Also, what about, there are no galleries right now to watch the House of Representatives or the Senate, and what it means for shutting different buildings in Washington, D.C. We'll talk about that with the Congressman when we return right here on Midday Mobile.